The crew of the scientists had no idea they had become instant international celebrities and acclaimed heroes. They stood amazed at the resounding reception, unable to believe that it was for them. Pitt left the glory to Birch and the others. While they were feted in the city at hastily thrown together banquets, he remained aboard ship and gave a full report over his Global Star satellite phone to Admiral Sandecker in the NUMA headquarters building in Washington. "The encounter took quite a beating," he explained. "Moreover, to stay afloat, we had to jettison almost all our equipment into the sea."
"The submersibles, too?"
Sandecker's voice took on a serious tone. "We set them adrift, but picked them up later."
"Good. You're going to need them."
"I don't follow you, Admiral. With half our underwater research gear lying on the seabed, there is no way we can carry out our original mission of mapping the Tonga Trench."
"I don't expect you to map the trench. I expect you to dive on the Emerald Dolphin. Your job now is to survey what's left of her for evidence relating to the fire and the cause of her rapid sinking."
"I'm not a fire insurance investigator. Just what exactly am I supposed to look for?"
"Don't worry," said Sandecker. "I'm sending someone who has experience in marine disasters. He's also an expert in deep submergence vehicles."
"Anybody I know?" asked Pitt.
"You should," said Sandecker cagily. "He's your assistant special projects director."
"Al Giordino," Pitt exclaimed happily. "I thought he was still working on the Atlantis project in the Antarctic."
"Not anymore. He's in the air now and should be landing in Wellington tomorrow morning."
Albert Giordino trudged across the gangway leading from the top of the dry dock to the deck of the Deep Encounter, lugging an old-fashioned steamer trunk over a burly shoulder. The sides were covered with colorful labels advertising hotels in countries around the world. One hand clutched a strap of the metal trunk, while the other clutched an antique leather satchel. He paused at the top of the gangway, dropped his load, and gazed around the empty work deck. Giordino's shoulders were almost as wide as his body was tall. At 5 feet 4 inches and 175 pounds, he was all muscle. His Italian ancestry was apparent in his olive skin, black curly hair, and walnut-colored eyes. Gregarious, sarcastic, and jovial, his cutting humor often made those in his presence either laugh or cringe. Friends since childhood, Pitt and Giordino had played on the same football teams in high school and at the Air Force Academy. Wherever one went, the other was sure to follow. Their adventures together above and under the sea had become legend. Unlike Pitt, with his aircraft hangar full of antique cars, Giordino lived in a condo with decor that would incite an interior decorator to suicide. For transportation, he drove an old Corvette. Besides his work, Al's passion was women.
"Ahoy the ship!" he shouted.
He waited before shouting again, as a figure walked out onto the bridge from the pilot house, and a familiar face stared down at him. "Can you restrain yourself?" Pitt said in mock seriousness. "We don't take kindly to barbarians coming aboard an elegant vessel."
"In that case, you're in luck," said Giordino, flashing a vast smile. "You could use a vulgar rowdy to liven up the place."
"Stay put," Pitt said. "I'll come down." In a minute, they were unashamedly embracing like the old friends they were. Though Giordino was 3 times stronger, Pitt always delighted in lifting the shorter man off the ground. Pitt slapped his friend on the back. "The last I heard, you were engaged to be married." Giordino held up his hands in a helpless gesture.
"Sandecker took me off the project, and my lover was offered a job to decipher ancient writings in China. She didn't want to turn down the opportunity, so she flew off in the first plane to Beijing."
"I'm happy to see you can cope with rejection."
"Oh, well, it beats being beaten with a whip, having your tongue nailed to a tree, and thrown in the trunk of a 1951 Nash Rambler."
After Giordino had unpacked and settled in, he entered Pitt's cabin carrying a bottle of Don Julio Reserve, Blue Agave, Añejo tequila, and 2 sterling silver cups.
"Shall we test it and make sure it meets our qualifications?"
As they drank,
Pitt filled Giordino in on what had happened to the Emerald Dolphin. Then they sat there until midnight, sipping the reserve tequila, telling old war stories, and reliving their adventures together throughout the years. Finally, Giordino rose to return to his cabin.
When does the shipyard expect to have the hull repaired?
Captain Birch and I hope to get underway the day after tomorrow and be on site 4 days later.
Time enough for me to regain the tan I lost in the Antarctic.
Giordino noticed the leather bag sitting in the corner of the cabin.
Is that the case you mentioned that belonged to Dr. Egan?
The same. Giordino picked it up and ran his fingers over the leather.
Fine grain, quite old.
German made. Egan had good taste.
You want it?
You can have it. Giordino sat down again and set the case on his lap.
I have a thing about old luggage.
He unlatched the catches and lifted open the lid, and nearly 2 quarts of oil flowed out into his lap and onto the carpet covering the deck. After the shock faded, it gave Pitt a very acidic look indeed.
I never knew you had a thing for practical jokes.
Pitt's face reflected pure astonishment. I don't, trust me. I had nothing to do with this. This case was empty when I checked it yesterday. I don't understand why somebody would bother to sneak in here and fill it with oil.
Then where did it come from? It didn't just materialize.
I haven't the foggiest idea, said Pitt. There was a strange look in his eyes. But I'm betting we'll find out before the voyage is over.